Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. Our mission is simple. We want to help you become a better hunter. We believe that mobility kills and efficiency will set you free.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Cates, and I am by myself hosting tonight because this is the series that I've put together. I know we've talked before about how we're going to be doing different series during this podcast season. Josh is doing one. Chris started one called it Adventures of a Mobile Hunter, where he talked to the Southern Outdoorsman about scouting for a swamp buck and eventually went on a hunt. And he'll be finishing that up at some point. But my series, I wanted to go do something a little bit different, something that you've all heard me talk about on here before that makes my eyes glaze over to a certain extent. And that's why I feel like this is the perfect thing for me to do. We're going to be talking a lot of archery in this thing. The series is called Anatomy of a Miss. And not the anatomy of a miss on a target in your backyard, but the anatomy of a miss on a big deer. The goal of this series is to have you learn from some of the top killers that we've had on our podcast or have hoped to have on our podcast and learn from their mistakes and understand that missing can be part of the hunting and specifically the mobile hunting world. So tonight I thought of no better guest than my very own co-host, Chris Leppert. So Chris, how are you doing this evening?
Not too bad, man. My little girl had her 10th birthday tonight. So she wanted chicken wings and then I cooked her nice mom's filet. That cost us some money. She wanted filet, so made some filet tonight in the cast iron oven, drank some wine and had some twice baked potatoes. So it's been a pretty good evening, hung out with family and all that, but ready to talk deer.
Well, yes. So to give everyone an idea, I've got a set of questions that I'm going to be working through with every one of the guests that are on this series. And we're also going to have archery people on here too to talk about why missing a deer or why missing a target is so rattling to somebody. So this is the Mobile Hunter Podcast. So I felt the best way to begin this is with a hunt. And Chris, you and I have discussed several different times on and off the podcast about missing, about killing, and how there are, we kind of just describe it as highs and lows. This series is to get a little bit more in depth into the thought process, the thinking, and the emotions surrounding it, because I feel like it's something that the outdoor media world doesn't like to show.
We
know deer get wounded. We know deer get missed, and you know, it's a very important thing for a lot of people to understand that misses are some of our biggest points of learning. So I'm going to go ahead and hop into the questions. So I would like for you to tell the audience the miss that you've picked out, the year and date or season that the shot occurred.
Okay. So I'll kind of briefly get into that a little bit. So I had gone two sits and ruled a couple places out basically. and I was on my third. It was the beginning of October of this past, well, I guess we're technically still in deer season, aren't we?
Yes, as time of recording, it is still in deer season.
I can't wrap my mind around that still. So it was the beginning of October, and I had got on some deer. I felt like they were avoiding some pressure, we'll say. And I was very confident that I was going to get a shot at this buck. So this was the beginning of October, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
I was creeping up a secondary ridge, and I knew that this buck was going to come down to food, basically right by me, and was precisely October 6th. And that deer, did you just want to know the date, or did you want the
first? No, go ahead and go into the story, because right, it's going to lead into some other questions that I have for you here in a little bit, actually.
So I had a really good eight on camera. He's pushing 140 inches, which is a big eight. It's pretty wide. And I had seen him glassing the evening before during a rain. I couldn't hunt that day, though. I had family obligations. And, of course, you know, on our way to what we were doing, I took a little drive. And sure enough, he's standing out there. And I'm like, well, if you're there now, buddy, you're where I'd sit on you in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I crept up that secondary ridge that next day, just super slow. And on my way up, I had fallen on my bow, on my poor sight again. That already happened once this year when I fell on my e-bike. And I get up to where I feel like is the best geographical location to cover the most ground. And I go up the backside of a maple tree, and I'm probably about 18 to 20 feet up. And there was a bench up to my left, and it wasn't long before a small buck came through. And of course, you know, any deer that comes through, I'm like keyed up. So I see antlers. I'm like, oh my God. And I turn the camera on, and and I calm down. I'm like, hey, jump. It's a 2-year-old. Calm down. It's not a deer you're going to shoot. And he's acting like he's been, I mean, he's acting like an Alabama deer would, like we got a 3-month rifle season or something.
Really cagey.
He is cagey as hell. I'm like, dude, calm down. Like, you don't even see me. What's your problem? So he goes on up the hill away from me. I don't know if he got a whiff of me or what happened or whatever, but he did not care for the situation. So I kind of ease up a little bit. And then right as I do, I see that rack coming through the weeds, and I'm like, oh, hi. And I just halfway wonder if that's what made him uneasy, like that big buck coming up behind him. Because you're talking about a deer that's 75 inches. This deer is literally almost double.
Oh, yeah.
This deer, you know. So that buck comes through right on the bench, and I'm like scurrying. You know, I got the camera on him. I get my rangefinder out, and I'm like trying, and he's just like strolling like he's got not a care in the world. And I snap a tree, you know, I pop the rangefinder on a tree, and it says 31 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he keeps coming closer and closer, and he gets behind this tree, and I stopped him. I was like, well, he's significantly closer. I'm going to put the 25 on him and let him rip. I released the freaking arrow and watched the arrow sail right underneath that buck. Never even touched.
Oh, man.
And the deer lets out a quick short and takes off up over the hill, and turns around and stands there looking at me at like probably 70 yards.
Really?
I'm like, dude, don't do that. 70-yard pin. Even though right now I'm like, well, what happened? Like, so after that, I was like, well, you missed. Like, you missed a shot that's less than double that. Don't take another one, stupid. So I watched him, and he finally blew and ran off. I'm like, well, that's probably, you know, the end of my evening. And it was. And I ranged the tree that he was standing behind, and it said 31 yards.
Really?
And that was all it took.
Okay. And,
you know, I know about the questions you're going to ask me, so I'll save part of it. But essentially, I never touched the deer, so that screwed me up pretty bad, as you can imagine. There's never, like, this is my third sit in Ohio. I've already endured, you know, some struggles along the way, opening day, and then, you know, Kentucky was a boss, Tennessee was a bust, you know, very tough hunting. And so it was rough to get on a deer that quick, you know, to make a decision, execute it, and say, oh, wow, here he comes. I did everything else right, read the sign right, and I blew really what's been the easiest for me.
Okay.
It's hard to get on the deer. So
absolutely. Absolutely. So this is the, like you said, this is a 140 inch 8-point that you had glass, that you had camera on camera at different points.
Oh yeah. All summer long. Got beautiful footage of him glassing, beautiful footage of him on scrapes, on a trail cam, anything you could ever want.
Okay. So you have history with this deer at that point. Like you've seen him, you've stated this is the deer that I am targeting for this year.
Yep.
So you loose the arrow and you watch it sail right under the deer. What are the emotions that you have immediately knowing that that arrow is not hitting its mark?
Man. It's really tough to describe, and maybe it's the same for everybody. I don't know. I know that there's kind of some ego there with being a guy who competed and did pretty good there. And, and then you talk about it online and it's like, I did this, but I can't hit a deer. Like, I missed a whole deer, you idiot. So I really felt stupid and, really, really down. Okay. Very down. It's almost like you lose a little piece of your soul and you'll never get that back. You could kill that deer the next day and still feel low. It's weird.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So that's kind of, and I think anybody who's missed a deer, like especially their target deer, has those feelings. Like, you immediately get that drop in your stomach, you feel a little sick, and like you said, just like a little part of your soul leaves your body at that point.
Yeah.
What are you thinking as you see the arrow miss the deer, and then the deer like blows a little bit and then runs to 70? Like, what are your thoughts going through this point?
I can't believe that I did everything else right. Like, literally just some of the most perfect scouting, e-scouting, intel work that I've ever done in my life. And I even, like, I told all you guys, like, I'm going to kill a buck. I painted my face like a goof wagon. Like, I was freaking ready for the grip and grin, and I knew it was going to happen. I remember creeping up that secondary ridge right where I figured they were crossing from the public to private. I found some tracks, and then I started, you know, backtracking, and I found a rub and then another rub, and a tree shredded and snapped. And I'm like, well, we're going the right way. You know, like, okay, like, this is kind of easy. Like, all right. I sure hope I'm right. And then, you know, to make all those decisions and to do that, which that's not something that just happens. Like, it sounds easy when you or somebody else put it together, but it's like, you can walk miles and miles and miles and days or weeks and never have that situation ever.
Correct.
So, yeah, my biggest thought was, what did you do? Like, you can't just go find mature deer after mature deer. Like, that was probably your opportunity. You know, a lot of times you get an opportunity at one, maybe two mature deer, especially if we're talking about public land hunting. I mean, mm-hmm. It's tough, you know, pressure moves in and stuff, and it just, you know, and hell, we started with pressure. So just really tough. So yeah, I thought, man, you're a screw up, dude. You just screwed it all up.
Okay. So it's almost as though, like, there's this, this is kind of an odd set, part to it, but, there's a story about a guy. It's not a story. It's a real life thing. So there was a Japanese soldier in World War II who fought the war like 25 years still after the war was over, because he was in the jungle. And he tells this story about how a soldier took a shot at him, and he caught the gleam of the bullet coming towards him, and he felt it whisk by his face. And he said, in that moment, I saw the future. So what he means is, like, he saw, you know, basically life flash before his eyes, and this is it for me. When you release the arrow and you have all these thoughts and things in your head, did you have anything similar kind of happen for you when you see the deer trot off? Like, I screwed up, but I've got to tell people about this now.
Yeah. And I did. You know, it was funny too, because I mean, you know, as well as anybody, like, I laid it out there mm-hmm. last year, and, you know, I poured over 100 miles in scouting by August, and went and scouted with Jake in Kentucky and Josh and Corey. And I was all over the country scouting and learning and absorbing. And so I did kind of like reflect pretty immediately, as I'm sitting in the tree, you know, like remembering all the miles that, you know, when me and Greg went to Indiana and put in a 14-mile day, and mm-hmm. and the 20.5-mile weekend with Jake and Josh and Corey. I mean, all that's just like flashing by. Like, you did all that, and everything you did and learned led to this moment, and you messed it up. So then, you know, some of the other tough part comes, because when you talk about deer hunting online, I mean, mm-hmm. in my opinion, I think you're dishonest if you don't tell the whole story. And so I felt like, man, if I'm going to post about when, you know, the good times are rolling and all that, well, I think people should see the other part. And I laid it out there, and it, you know, it was kind of funny, because there were a lot of people that were pretty like supportive, and you know, kind of some bigger personality people online, mm-hmm. stuff, if you mm-hmm. will. Like, I think Catman said something that was like really encouraging, and just meant a lot. But yeah, I had to lay it out there for people to know, because again, everybody, I mean, if you're telling me you don't miss deer, I struggle to believe that.
Well, I would agree. I would wholeheartedly agree with that statement.
So yeah, man, I really, really felt uncomfortable with it, because it's, you know, you're kind of vulnerable, or whatever you want to call it. Sounds kind of girly, but at the end of the day, I feel like you should tell the truth. And when you mess up, you know, you might help somebody else prepare for something that wouldn't think of it, or, you know, whatever. So.
Absolutely. So you kind of alluded into my next question, which was, up until that point, you know, what was the season like? And as you just stated, up until that point in the season, every other state you had been to hadn't gone the way that you had hoped.
Yeah.
And with this situation, you'd kind of put eggs in a basket, saying the deer is going to die today on this sit. That deer is going to die. What do you typically do during, prior to season and even into season, to ensure, you know, prep work on your bow? We're using a bow as the example here, because this was an archery hunt. But you know, what's your prep work look like? What happens for you? You know, we'll get to after the miss, but up until that point, what does prep work with your weapon look like for you? And when do you typically start?
So, I mean, I'm going to go into the whole thing. So postseason scouting starts immediately after the season, and this year it'll even start before the season ends in other states as well as our own. Then you roll into shooting your bow, you roll into practicing with your setup, like mm-hmm. your equipment, you know, stand sticks, saddle, platform, pack, everything. And you kind of start trying to dial that as best you can. And then comes the archery. Normally I'm shooting almost every day, but this year running the expo and doing all the stuff we do, it just, you know, adding the scouting in and everything and running mm-hmm. a bunch of different setups just wasn't working out. So I actually didn't shoot my bow at all until after our Northern show. It needed strings. We ended up hooking up with Matt from, funny, I use that choice of words, Hooked Up Custom Bowstring. So that was funny. And got some new strings put on it so then I could get it tuned. And that's where, you know, you start dialing a setup. You talk about like a saddle or standing sticks or something, man, you got to dial your bow. So we tuned it up, got the arrows flying well, and then checked the broadheads, which we had just invested in some Severs this year, mm-hmm. which, you know, a lot of buddies were using them. And I thought, I'm going to jump on the train here because these things are working really well for everybody else. And then ended up switching sights this year and going with that torch from Redline. And so I had to reset all of my axis adjustments to ensure that my level is, my bubble level is properly leveled,
mm-hmm.
full draw and everything for like third axis and stuff. And then comes sighting in after sighting in and just checking your tapes constantly. And really, the day I started shooting and tinkering, I literally shot probably 30 to 50 arrows every single day and multiple times, like a week leading up to, say, Kentucky or opening weekend here. I'm shooting two or three sessions a day, mm-hmm. just so I mean, when people hear about me taking a long shot or something, I'm shooting a hell of a lot. Like, and I'm checking weird yardages and all that. I'm not just shooting 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. Like, I'll drop back to 37 and 52 and just checking all the little yardage marks on my tapes and mm-hmm. everything. So, and that's pretty much it.
Consistency. That's what yeah. you're aiming for with each one of these things is that you're attempting to get here. So lots of repetition, repetitious behavior, lots of yes. bearing in your head that if I make a shot, it will be the shot. So up until that point, you're telling yourself, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good.
Yeah.
The shot happens. Did you blame yourself or did you blame the equipment?
I always blame myself first. It's always my fault first. And then I go through a series of steps to eliminate either myself or the bow. And mm-hmm. in this particular situation, I did actually find out that it was a little of both, but mainly me.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Okay. All right.
Did it ruin hunting for you in any way? That's a big question. I understand yeah. that.
So it would take a lot to go that far, but I can say that it really grinds you. It really wears your attitude down. And mm-hmm. I think that's probably what's part of being good at maybe anything. I'm not saying I'm good, but I mean, I think it is a part. If you want to be good at something, you'd better learn to like have coping skills with failure and all that. Cause it, I mean, I was depressed, man. It was rough. Well,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw pictures of the deer. I know the one you're talking about, and I would have, vomited had that happened.
Yeah.
So like you just brought up a good point. You better have coping skills. Like, what do you begin questioning yourself during this time? And if you do, what are you doing mentally to help yourself get past that? Are you staying buried in it? Does it ever go away? Like, what is that ultimately like for you?
So I'd be interested to hear like 100 people asked about this. I know we can't do that, but
we're going to have a lot.
I'm a basket case when it comes to my setups. I really want to know that when the deer comes in, like it's so tough, like I said, to get an encounter, and you might get one or two a year.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make it count. So I'm really weird about it. That being said, at first I questioned myself a little bit and everything and struggled and all that, but the very next day, as soon as it was daylight and like I had a second, I went right outside and I said, okay, who was it? Who's guilty? And I went through my steps of shooting, and I started off super close just in case, because I knew I'd fallen on my bow. So that's where I was like, was it me? Was it my bow? What happened? And so started off at like 10 yards. It was fine. I dropped back to 20 and I was a little low, dropped back to 30. I was a little lower.
Okay.
So to start with the bow, because we got a lot more, well, not really a lot more. There's two things that happen. I did knock my sight off and it was off by 2 yards. Now, that doesn't mean a thing at 20 yards for me. At 31 yards, it absolutely does.
Yes.
So that basically means that I put my 25-yard pin on a 33-yard deer.
Oh.
So, yeah, I was two yards low, so add 2 yards to what I had already done. So I'm 8 yards off. You're talking about 10 inches.
Yeah.
For me, I'm a short draw.
Massive drop.
Child's draw length. So crazy drop. So I went through the motions of finding that out and fixed it. Every other thing was super consistent. Even the amount that it was off was consistent. It's when you're not consistent, then it's time to freak out.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, okay. And that's something that I have to coach myself through, going through all the equipment issues I did in 2019.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
As like traumatic basically as that was for me, that was a hell of a learning experience. Cause now I literally have what I would call pretty good coping skills with some stuff. And so I'll just talk myself and coach myself through it. Like, okay, we're going to go out here, and if the arrow misses by 10 feet, we don't care. Because if we can get two arrows to miss by 10 feet, we know it ain't us.
Correct.
So we know that we need to do something with the bow, which I wouldn't wait for that again. I'd move the sight or something. But once I saw that it was consistently low and I'm like slapping arrow shafts and clover leafing and all that, I'm like, all right, there's nothing wrong with the bow when it comes to consistency. Clearly, I just knocked the sight off a little bit. Let's get it back to where it needs to be. So I did that. And then, the other part really was figured out the day before. I ranged what had happened too. I should go into this. So that deer was behind that tree and he looks close. I've got it on video and everything. He looks super close to that tree. He's like 4 steps behind that tree.
Really?
And so basically what they used to do to us in the IBO is they put something like, they'd put a target like behind a log, you know, like 10 yards behind a log, and the log would keep you from seeing the ground. So you couldn't like try to judge it.
Yes.
And literally we all joke and call that getting yarded. You know, that's what they do to you. They're the best in the business at that. And they'll take that yardage away, take that ground away, and you can't see it. It's really difficult. And that's what happened. I couldn't see the ground. He was coming closer, you know, straight at me kind of, but to the south. But what I didn't realize is he was on a bench that I thought was like 6 feet wide, and it was like 30 feet wide.
And wow.
I couldn't see that at all.
Okay.
So it was very, very weird. Very, what am I trying to say? Help me out here, Rick. Very, it wasn't telling the truth. Very
deceiving.
Deceiving is the word I wanted.
Yeah.
It deceived the shit out of me.
So, okay. So like to kind of look back at that, a course correction for you, it wasn't even 12 hours later. It's, we're going to figure this out. We're going to find out what went wrong here. I have a problem. This needs to be fixed if I intend to go back out again and hunt this deer.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Basically, I mean, you always, you know, I went through my little baby pouty moments too. Like, oh, why do I do this? This is stupid. I could spend my time doing something else. I'm like, what are you talking about? There's nothing. There's nothing that would make you this happy. You can't be perfect. You can't do perfect or do right, do better all the time. Like sometimes you're going to screw up or whatever. Don't be such a little bitch about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, talking to you guys, I mean, especially, you know, Pierce will give it to you straight.
Like,
hey, pick your bootstraps up and go back out, you know? And then Josh with his not feelings doesn't feel anything. So, you know, talking to you guys, that helps a lot.
Good deal. How long do you feel like it took you to recover and get your mind back in a healthy place to say, okay, I'm ready to go put an arrow in a buck again?
2 days.
2 days. Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, it took me two to make that decision. And, well, let's say three. I can't remember exactly when the moment came, but I had already planned to hunt 3 days after.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was off of work, and I was going to go out all day. But because I was a little roughed up, I slept in a little on the depressed side. And it was very interesting because I actually decided that I wasn't even going to hunt. I was just going to scout with my stuff just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I went out. I had my stand and everything on my back, and I had my bow, but it was all about scouting. I did not even have a plan to get in a tree. I wanted to scout, and if I found something good enough, I would get in a tree then. Otherwise, I told my wife, I was like, more than likely, I will be home early. You know, I'll be here for dinner tonight, right around dark.
Okay. So what was the redemption for you? And do you feel like that you redeemed yourself from that shot?
Absolutely. So really the redemption for me wasn't the shot I made on the buck that I took. It was actually me just getting back up on the horse and going again. And basically, I always, like, this is my little saying, scouting sets you free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. You know, I scouted my way through the woods, found a great, absolutely phenomenal grove of red oaks, creep up a secondary ridge on the edge of them. There's deer in there that I'm running out. There's feed sign like I've never seen. The oaks are raining, and then I see that lone beech tree, and I'm like videoing it and sending it to Jacob Emery as I find it and sending it in a thread to you guys. And I'm like, oh my God. And, you know, I did end up sitting that night, but the redemption for me was the scouting piece, because to me, just like I went and shot my bow to check, I went out and scouted and found another deer. And it happened to be a deer that I'd seen one time before, way earlier in May. Didn't even know, you know, and I did well. I found the sign and read the sign really, really well, which is important. And then I got on that deer and I killed the damn thing 20 days later. You know, I missed the deer. I went out 3 days later, scouted, hung a camera, got my first buck on that camera 3 days later. And then three more days later, I had the best deer I've ever targeted on public land. Actually, the best deer I've ever targeted.
Correct.
In my life. You know, even on trail camera, keep in mind, deer that I haven't killed. Like, that's the biggest deer I've ever had on trail camera. And I found him. So, you know, that was really the redeeming piece. Don't get me wrong. It's cool that I was able to kill him and, you know, made a shot or whatever, even though the shot wasn't what I wanted, but it was a great shot. Just wasn't the one that I wanted. But, you know, I would say the scouting, hands down. Like, I felt such a sense of relief, and even more, the confidence was just, I can't explain it either, because I didn't even have daylights of this year. I had nothing even close to daylight, but the whole time, even with pressure, even with, you know, all these other little things going wrong, my confidence never wavered once, because I kept scouting. And that, to me, I mean, it made me feel almost at peace. Like, no, it'll be all right.
You know, I'm glad you said this, because this happens to a lot of people in a lot of different things. And you can, like, it bleeds over into other areas of their lives, or other things bleed over. You know, you could be doing something where you screw up big time. Like, you know, not even, you know, take away deer hunting. Something happens at work, you screw up big time. You piss off your spouse, you screw up big time, or something along those lines. And then that can eat at you in a lot of other areas of your life.
Yeah.
And it can come out, like, it, you know, for a lot of guys that I know who bow hunt, it can come out specifically when you're target practicing archery, when you're out scouting, you start questioning every single thing that you're doing, because your confidence is rattled, because you're not dealing with the thing that you need to deal with. And like in this situation, you dealt directly with it, and you dealt with it in a way that I hope when people listen to this, they start kind of understanding. You shouldn't hide this shit. You have to talk through it. You have to talk about it. And you have to look at it logistically and objectively. Is, was it my bow? Was it me? Was it my equipment? Or did I just not read something completely? Did I read something completely wrong here? And I've been off the entire time. And we talk about bouncing stuff off one another a lot. And if you hold all this shit in and you're the only one dealing with it, because you're the only one that believes that you can fix it, you're going to end up continuing that pattern in a really, really bad way in a lot of different things in your life.
Tell me I'm friends with mental health professionals without telling me. The other thing, though, like, so an old buddy of mine, Travis Moose, told me once when I went through all that shit in competition archery. I mean, literally, competition archery is literally figuring out what's wrong with your bow most of the time. Stuff goes wrong. I can't explain it. I never had this stuff happen before, but I also didn't pay attention to it like I did. Like, I mean, there's a lot of people that think they're good at archery. Go shoot competition and you'll be 10 times better. And you learn things that you wouldn't. And really, it's not a skill. The skill is learning how to work on your bow, tune your bow, you know, diagnose issues.
Yes.
Form in your bow and everything, your release. And, like, you know, I'll try to keep my facial hair the same length roughly during hunting season. So that way I can maintain the exact same facial pressure. Like, you start noticing things that are different because you're just keyed up and trying to, you're really trying and straining. So, but you ever see that movie Apocalypto?
Yeah.
The part where it's the beginning of the movie where they see the tribe's people that had escaped, and he's talking to his son about how fear is like a cancer.
Yes.
And like when you don't directly face an issue like that, you literally turn into a basket case.
Yes, you do.
It's bad. And like you said, it'll leak into a lot of other parts of your life, stress you out, makes you anxious, the whole nine. And then, which you hit on, it starts to kind of take your confidence out of things. And when you're not confident, you're not reading the sign well. And this sounds stupid and cheesy. It's the truth. Confidence kills more deer than anything. When you can come up with a theory in your head to convince yourself to get into a tree, it's got to be reasonable and real, right?
But yeah.
At the end of the day, like if you can walk through and see a bunch of leaves, you know, chopped up, that are dried up and chopped up, and there's acorn caps and crunched up acorn shells, well, clearly a deer are feeding here. Then you go up a tree, you have deer coming, and it confirms it. And then you just get better. You know, you start reading different sign and interpreting it and what you need to do. And when you don't have confidence, you won't do that. Instead, what you'll do is you'll be your own biggest hater, and you will talk yourself out of everything. I think for me, that is the part, you know, I kind of went into this and didn't finish it. Travis Moose always used to tell me when I had those issues, good archers find problems and great archers fix them. And it really, they do, but it's more about dealing with an issue directly. And that translates into every part of anybody's life.
Yes.
You know, you got to face shit head on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad you bring all this stuff up, because this is the heart and soul of why we decided to do this whole series. Is we want people to kind of understand, like, you can pick a problem, you can diagnose a problem, but fixing the problem is the biggest part of, you know, getting better. Like, it's great to have, you know, I tell people in sessions all the time, it's great to reach the mountaintop. You have full awareness at that point. But if you don't ever go down into the valley, you're never going to gain any insight.
Yep. Like,
you have to go into the valleys in order to understand what is going on within you, with your equipment, and, you know, closing your eyes and saying that, you know, something's not there, and then blaming the boogeyman doesn't mean that you're solving the problem.
Right. And it's, man, I put a lot of pressure on myself, so I probably sound a little too serious, but I also know, like, being, you know, the guy who started the Mobile Hunters Expo, like, I can take this gear that I talk about being good and go out and put a nice buck down in just a few sits. And, like, I know that that's, you know, not only fun for me and cool, but I know what that does for, you know, me moving forward when I'm giving somebody advice or, you know, whatever. I mean, I can show, like, hey, this worked for me. So it's tough when it doesn't work out. You're like, well, I got the deer here, but I don't have the deer.
Does that count? Well, good deal, man. Any other words of wisdom that you'd like to pass on to the listeners this evening?
God, shoot your bow all the time. There's so much that can be learned. First, if you want to be a better archer, go watch the School of Knock and go through that now and build your muscles now. Join a 3D league, an indoor 3D league, anything you can do. I walked away from competition archery for a multitude of reasons, one of which I really wanted to be able to hunt and play with my friends rather than be locked down to, you know, X amount of every weekend for 7 months, basically shooting. I want to go hunt and everything. And if you get into the comp side now, you can learn a bunch and build your muscles up and really build your muscle memory. And you get what's called like a shot rotation, similar to like a pitcher, like all the things that they go through. And rather than thinking about, oh my God, that buck's right there. Oh my God, he's huge. Oh my God. Oh my God. You're like, okay, draw your bow straight out, bend at the hips, you know, anchor, blah, blah, blah. Am I in my peep? You know, is everything centered? Blah, 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 blah. Pull, squeeze, squeeze, pull, pull. And then there goes the arrow. So, and it really kind of chills you out. And what's sad is if that deer slows down a little bit, I ranged that other tree and he's dead, but I didn't have that time. You'd have thought it was the middle of November. It's like October 6th. Come on, man, slow down, act like a mature buck and be weary and like, oh man, is somebody trying to kill? No, he's strolling like dang Donald Duck down the street or something, happy as a clam and doesn't care about anything. So clearly I wasn't able to watch it, but clearly he was bedded just behind the weeds and trees that he came through. Cause
yeah,
you're talking about an hour before dark that deer came down, you know? So,
oh man.
But hey, it'll eat at me still, but best miss I've ever had.
Absolutely.
That's probably the best shot I've ever taken. Cause now I have a big ass deer on my wall and a cool story and pics and got to drink bourbon with Josh and you and my wife. And like, it was just cool, you know?
Yeah.
For those that don't know, probably all of our listeners know, but I didn't really say this, but I ended up killing a 14 point 172 inch deer on November 4th. So I should add that. I feel like everybody that listens to us knows that, but for the new listeners, maybe not. So that being said, hell of a miss. If I could miss a nice eight like that every year and then end up like that, I would then do it. I'd agree to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I guess like this is the end of the first episode of the series. I'm excited that we're doing this. I'm excited to learn from a lot of people because part of the reason I'm doing this too is for me to learn. Like, you know, I'm on this podcast every week almost, and I want to learn more as I'm doing these from people who I look up to in the hunting world as well, because it's important not only if you're going to admire somebody for their prowess and being able to do something, you know, if you can learn from the mistakes that they had made, there's never a late time to do that. So it's ultimately very important and why this podcast exists in this realm and why it looks like it does. So be that as it may, guys, my name is Rick Cates. This has been the Mobile Hunter Podcast, the Anatomy of a Miss series. And tonight my guest was Chris Leppert. Thanks again, Chris, for coming on.
I appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you too, bud. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's podcast. The best way you can support the podcast is by sharing online and with your buddies at Deer Camp. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a 5-star review.